Welcome to the weekend in this edition of the Florida Roundtable. I'm Bill Mick. You can catch up with me and podcast of the show at BillMick.com. This week, we'll take a look at the six amendments to the Florida Constitution that'll be on our ballots in November. Joining me, political scientist Chris Muro. Together, we'll explore how these amendments get on the ballot, what it takes to make them law, and the specifics of all six amendments. Chris graduated from Georgetown University, holds a master's in political science from UCF. He's worked for Congressman John Mica, been a campaign advisor on various campaigns in Florida and Virginia, and is currently a political scientist, analyst, and campaign consultant. Today, we'll take advantage of his expertise in breaking down the Florida's constitutional amendments, not the least of which involve abortion and recreational marijuana. Today, on the Florida Roundtable from the Florida News Network.
Parents of Florida, you are not alone in your parenting journey. April is Child Abuse Prevention Month. In challenging moments, it's brave to ask for help. Prevent Child Abuse Florida and partners across the state are ready to support you with resources and programs right in your community. The state of Florida invests in you because every parent deserves support and every child deserves a loving home. Visit PreventChildAbuseFL.org.
How exciting does a scavenger hunt sound? Grab your friends and go on a wild quest.
Come on, everyone. Let's go.
The Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission's Wild Quest is a free scavenger hunt taking place on wildlife management areas across the state, April 27th to May 5th. So grab your phone and join FWC on a wild adventure across Florida's best nature spots.
Look, a bird.
Complete missions and earn points for a chance to win cool prizes.
Go to FloridaWildQuest.com to play. That's FloridaWildQuest.com.
Help DEA keep our community safe and healthy by participating in National Prescription Drug Take-Back Day, Saturday, April 27th. Take action right in your own home by cleaning out your medicine cabinet of unneeded medications. Keep them safe, clean them out, take them back. Find a collection site near you at DEATakeBack.com. Do your part to lower overdose deaths and prevent prescription drug misuse before it starts. That's DEATakeBack.com.
World-class experts, beautiful flowers and foliage, a kid's zone, juried artists and crafters, free admission. Sounds pretty great, right? If you agree, then you won't want to miss the 62nd Annual Apopka Art and Foliage Festival, April 27th and 28th at Kitland Nelson Park. Check out the incredible flowers and foliage, talk to the plant doctors, and learn more about conservation. Plus, over 75 award-winning artists and crafters, food trucks, and live entertainment. Visit Apopka Art and Foliage Festival.
Glad you're with us for this edition of the Florida Roundtable. Taking a look at the constitutional amendments that'll be on the ballot. Chris Muro is with us. Chris, thanks for taking the time again. It's good to see you, my friend.
It's a pleasure, Bill. Appreciate you inviting me in and glad to be here.
Sure. Let's talk about the process to get these amendments on the ballot. There are a couple of three ways to do that. Let's lay that out for everybody to start with here.
Well, there's actually five different methods.
Five? Okay.
Five in the Florida.
I learn something every week and every time you're here. So there we go.
The Florida Constitution, your listeners can find this in Article 11 of that document. The two most common ways, though, would be the legislative referral, which is 3/5 of both houses of the state legislature, which is the easiest, fastest, cheapest way. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, there's the popular initiative process, which requires collecting signatures and then going through a approval process with the Florida Supreme Court.
And these are allegedly citizen-driven, but usually have a special interest group behind
them. Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. The other two common ways are, of course, the Constitutional Revision Commission that meets every 20 years. The next time it meets is 2038, but
trying to do away with that. It didn't happen, though.
Well, they tried in 2022, Bill. There was an amendment on the ballot to get rid of it. It received 54% of the vote. That would be a majority in most states. That's not a majority here.
Right. Right. Well, to change the Constitution, you want a bigger majority.
We do.
Anyway.
We do. We're big fans of the 60% rule.
Yeah.
The other way is the Tax and Budget Reform Commission, Bill. That meets every 20 years as well. That group will meet in 2028. And unlike the Revision Commission that has 37 members, this one has 25 members. And the last way, Bill, the fifth way, is a constitutional convention. Now, we haven't had one. The current constitution that we have in Florida was ratified in 1968.
Mm-hmm.
So it's coming up on 55 years in its age.
So somebody's going to come up with the idea to do this again before long.
Well, they may, but here's the good news, Bill, is that in recent decades, constitutional conventions have failed all across the country to become to be adopted.
Okay.
And Florida's process of initiating it is a little bit more difficult than other states. That's okay. Good news.
Right. Again, changing a constitution should require some effort.
Absolutely. That's the whole idea, is it's the fundamental, foundational principle of law that governs our society in our state.
Right.
So it should be difficult to change. But remember, in 55 years, Bill, we've changed the document more than 145 times.
Because of these amendments we put on.
Through the amendment process.
Yeah.
Now, we've had a total of six constitutions as a state since becoming a state.
Right.
But this one is the longest lasting, longest enduring, and I anticipate that it will continue to be for the foreseeable future. Problem is, in my estimation, is we're amending it too frequently.
Far too often, and for the wrong reasons.
And for the wrong reasons.
Let's talk about the Supreme Court's role in these constitutional amendments. If it's a petition, if it's a ballot initiative, the language has to be clear and concise, and it has to be a one subject. And that's what the Supreme Court rules on.
That's right.
They don't rule on the merits of the idea at all, whether it should be constitutional or not.
Well, in theory, yes. They're not supposed to. They're supposed to look just at the formality of, does it address the single subject matter?
Uh-huh.
Is the language clear, concise, not confusing to the voter? Does it fit within the number of words in the petition?
Right.
There actually was a situation back in 2006 where an amendment, they collected the signatures, but it had too many words in the actual description. It was struck from the ballot.
That's interesting. So once they approve it and say the language is good, and it's a one-topic thing, it's hitting the ballot the following November.
It's going on the general election ballot.
And we've got six of these puppies in play for the upcoming general election. We're going to talk about those with Chris Muro and hopefully give you some information that's helpful as you consider these for the ballot in November today on the Florida Roundtable. Stay with us.
Do you owe the IRS $10,000 or more in back taxes? Are you being audited or investigated? Has the IRS sent you a letter demanding payment? You may not owe what they claim. Make this free call to the Tax Doctor now. Let them negotiate with the IRS on your behalf.
800-240-4587. 800-240-4587. That's 800-240-4587.
Did you know that a car crash occurs every 44 seconds in Florida? And one in seven crashes involve distracted drivers? April is National Distracted Driving Awareness Month, and the Florida Department of Highway Safety and Motor Vehicles reminds you that distraction includes texting, putting on makeup, eating, attending to passengers, and more. Don't drive distracted, Florida. Brought to you by the Florida Department of Highway Safety and Motor Vehicles.
Hello, I'm Hector Elizondo, Emmy Award-winning actor, and I want to talk to you about getting older. My body hurts, my joints ache, and sometimes I forget.
I forget that doing all your own scenes for a movie isn't always the best decision, especially when you're galloping side saddle down a countryside road on a horse named Archibello, who seems to have only one speed, high. And pulling on his reins only seems to encourage him to go even faster. So, of course, my body hurts and my joints ache, but it's not because of my age. It's because I'm living my life. Oh, Archibello!
Don't let life pass you by. Take care of your brain health. It may just help you stay on top of your game.
As soon as this scene wraps, I'm going to kiss the ground, thank Archibello for his outstanding performance, feed him a carrot, and visit brainhealth.gov.
Find out how you can make the most of your brain as you age at brainhealth.gov.
Back Back on the Florida Roundtable, we talk these Florida constitutional amendments that are coming up in November. Chris Mero, political scientist, is our guest. And Chris, let's start diving into these amendments one at a time. Let's take them in the order in an article that I pulled from USA Today's Florida Network. Amendment 1, partisan school board members is the short title. Let's talk about that one for a minute.
Yes, this is something that has been in the works numerous occasions. So there was an amendment bill in 1998 that was adopted by the voters of Florida, revision number 11, that required nonpartisan school board elections. The argument was, from a policy perspective, that it was going to take the politics out of the elections process, right?
Yeah, sure, okay. We'll go with that.
That's it's like taking the wet out of
water. They are as divided as anything now, right?
Right, yeah. Right. You can't. You can't take politics out of elections. It's not possible. I think everybody recognizes that the school boards are hyper-polarized and extremely partisan. The other thing, as far as a policy perspective goes, Bill, is that voter identification is one of the most important pieces of information that a voter has, party identification. When, especially at elections that are lower than the presidential level, a lot of these elections, the only information that voters have would be the party identification of the candidate. And so in a nonpartisan election, you're stripping away from the voter one of the most important pieces of information they have.
Oh, it seems to be foundational about a candidate. If this is who you are, you identify with one party or the other, that's your core political beliefs, and that does tell voters a lot, or should. And pretending that it's not going to be a partisan race just because you can't put the label on there does seem to take away information that voters would want to have.
Oh, it's critical. And the other thing is that it allows for candidates, and I've seen this personally, attending school board candidates, speeches and campaign events, and they'll go in front of one group and claim to be wink and nod that they're on their side, and they'll go to the opposing group the next night, and they'll say the same thing. And so you've got, depending on what county you're in, if you're in Broward County, you'll have Republicans pretending to be Democrats. If you're in other counties that are more Republican, you'll be trying to convince voters that you're in the majority party there. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of these, I guess they call shenanigans these days, Bill, of trying to mask your partisan identification for your own political advantage. I believe this is a great idea to make the school board elections partisan once
again. In essence,
again,
it's more transparent.
It's more transparent. It's going to make the voter more informed. If you go and look at any supervisor of elections website, Bill, throughout the state of Florida, you're going to notice that for school board elections and judgeships, all nonpartisan races, the voter participation rate drops by about 30%. 30% of voters don't cast a ballot for their city council, for their school board, and for their judicial posts.
Because they don't know, or they don't care, or maybe a little of both?
I think it's a little bit of both, but I think it's more that they just don't feel comfortable they have enough information to make the decision, because we've removed from them one of the most important pieces of information, that's the party affiliation of the candidate.
Got a question that I tend to use for my purposes all the time, and it's, does this measure belong in the Constitution? Is this a form and function of government thing, something that should be in the Constitution, as opposed to lawmaking, which is done in some other amendments?
I would prefer if it was a legislative initiative that determined this. I would, if a compromise was made that, you know, each school board district would determine, or each county would determine for itself, because, you know, there were counties that used to have nonpartisan county commission races, and they've moved to partisan. Right. They used to have at-large elections.
Should it be consistent across the state, though? Is that why we do this by amendment or whatever?
Well, I think that the motivation here was to make it uniform and to make it nonpartisan for a political end, I believe. I mean, this was the Constitutional Revision Commission product.
Back in 98.
Back in 98 that we're dealing with here
today.
And
this one comes out of the legislature.
And this one here is going to overturn that if it gets passed. That's another story, though.
Right.
Is will it reach that 60% threshold?
And will the voters be educated enough on it to make a knowledgeable decision here?
I think that's key in all of these. I'm of the opinion as of right now, Bill, that it's not going to reach the 60% threshold.
I want to ask you about that later. But when will guys in the political science business like you are start polling and looking at these things to see what their chances are? Or has that already begun?
Well, that has begun, but on the more higher profile amendments. Okay, so
we're going to get to those. There's going to be some contention when that comes. Let's go to Amendment 2, which is enshrining in the Constitution the right to fish and hunt in the state of Florida. Sounds to me like that ought to be a legislative issue and doesn't need to be in the Constitution. How are you reading this, and what brought this about?
Well, I mean, there is the Article 1 of Florida's Constitution is the Declaration of Rights.
Okay.
So every single section in that article deals with defining specific rights and recognizing specific mm-hmm. rights.
Okay.
So this would be in addition to that litany of recognized rights that we have, the right to due process, freedom of speech in the press, and other things like that.
And by the way, go drop a line in the water.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
This one, though, is interesting in a couple of different aspects. The language of the actual amendment is kind of interesting because it says it's fishing and hunting is a public right that is the preferred means of managing and controlling fish and wildlife. So this language says that hunting and fishing by the general public is the preferred mechanism or means for managing our wildlife and our fish.
Is that going to do anything to the licensing thereof? It sounds like it's trying to restrict government a little bit, which I'm in favor of if we can.
Yeah, it could. There is a the last line of this does say that it will not impact or affect the authority of the Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission.
Right. Because there's a whole book of laws about all of these things.
Right. There is. Which, by the way, was also created in 1998 by the Constitution Revision Commission, the Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission, was created in 1998. So there are about two dozen states, Bill, that have a provision just like this mm-hmm. in their constitution. The right to hunt and fish. Everywhere it's been put on the ballot.
Well, you talk about preserving a way of life, I guess. That makes a little bit of sense on that front. What's your gut read on this one?
Yeah, I think this is one of those kind of amendments that people, they look at it.
It's got an attraction factor.
It's appealing.
Mm-hmm.
It has an emotional tug to it. It's uh-huh. kind of like, yeah, I want to be on the right side here. And it's kind of like the, I hate to say it, Bill, but the minimum wage. Right, you uh-huh. put that. Doesn't matter where you put it on Arkansas or California, it's going to get 65% or 70% of the vote.
Right.
I think this is one of those where it's going to get overwhelming support because people feel good about yes, hunting and fishing is kind of a natural right that we have and we should enshrine it in our Constitution.
Let's go to the first of the two biggies on these amendments, and it is legalizing recreational marijuana in the state for people 21 and older. They can have up to 3 ounces of pot and up to 5 grams of what they're calling cannabis concentrate.
Right.
Being pushed by a group called Smart and Safe Florida, which is backed heavily by Trulieve, which is the medical marijuana company in the state.
Right.
This is about money making is what this is, and they got big money behind this.
Well, the pro Amendment 3 people have raised and disclosed so far $55 million in contributions.
Uh-huh.
The opponents called FARM, by the way, Floridians Against Recreational Marijuana.
I
FARM,
like the acronym, yes.
$3,800. $3,800 is what they've raised.
Which takes me to another question, and we'll stay on this issue for a little bit. How are these amendments, any of them, whatever they are, how are they advertised and advocated for, and does big money generally win the day on an amendment battle?
Well, the ones that do get past that 60% threshold, they are putting in millions of dollars for effective advertising.
As you mentioned, with minimum wage, medical marijuana, and other measures
well,
we've
the medicinal
seen in recent years.
Yeah, that medicinal marijuana, the Morgan and Morgan Amendment, as I like to call it.
Right.
John Morgan himself had donated back in 2014, the first go-around, where it got about 58.5%. You know, he put $6-7 million of his own money just to get the petition signed.
Right.
Then it was eventually passed. I think it was either 2018 or 2020. 2020, I believe.
Uh-huh.
And it got over 70% of the vote that year.
But so, it took big money both times to make that happen.
But it
happen.
Did. It took big money.
Opposition doesn't get funded like those who are advocating for this. There's no real organized opposition that has the money-raising ability, it seems, on many of these amendments when they come around.
You know, that's true, and it's not only true here in Florida, but it's across the country, Bill. Proponents usually outspend the opponents, 8-9 to 1, not only here in Florida, but in California and other places that have, vigorous initiative process. You do see lots of money being poured in on the proponent side,
mm-hmm.
and that's happening here with Amendment 3. So the forces out there that want to bring recreational marijuana to Florida, they're well-financed. They seem to be well-organized. The governor is coming out against this.
Right.
And his argument so far has been, the only argument I've heard from Governor DeSantis is that it's
going to make the town smell like pot.
It's stinky.
Yeah.
It's stinky. There's got to be something more substantive than
that. I did read
that.
One argument that said that the language is so broad, it could make it difficult for the state to regulate the pot industry.
Yeah, well, I heard the same thing with Amendment 4 restored felon voting rights.
Right.
And they found a way to mitigate the impact of that, didn't they?
Well, that's the other thing. It's not over once an amendment passes because...
No.
That doesn't become law. It just directs the legislature to make law that complies with the amendment.
Exactly, exactly. And I think here, Bill, I think the governor is being a bit of a Luddite on this issue. You've got 24 states that have legalized it for recreational purposes.
Mm-hmm.
You have 38 states that have legalized it for medicinal purposes. The momentum is in the direction of further legalization.
And still illegal in all of those states, according to federal law, which is another factor in all of it. We've got more on the roundtable, three more amendments to get to, and a little discussion about what about after when we come back.
David was in big trouble with the IRS.
At first, I didn't owe that much, but after this year, it was out of control.
Then David called Get a Tax Lawyer.
Right away, they were like, oh yeah, looks like you're qualified to save.
Get a Tax Lawyer went to work.
Should have called way sooner.
Get a Tax Lawyer has helped thousands like David fight the IRS and get a fresh start.
Call 800-786-9014. That's 800-786-9014.
Want to hear something about life jackets? Try inflatable life jackets. Life jackets save lives. Wear it, Florida. For more information, go to myfwc.com. A message from the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission.
Hi, I'm Johnny Erickson Tata. Growing up with a brother with autism, Sarah Cronk witnessed firsthand how kids with disabilities felt left out by their peers. It's why at the age of 15, Sarah approached her cheerleading coach with an idea to include girls with disabilities on her school's cheer team. Well, what started out as an inclusive high school cheer team in a small town in Iowa has led to what is now known as Sparkle Effect, a thriving nonprofit with over 180 cheer teams across the United States, bringing students with and without disabilities together through cheerleading. The result? More confidence, higher grades, and better school attendance for kids with disabilities. And for those without a disability, new friends and a greater empathy. You want to learn more? Well, visit disabilitycampaign.org where we have posted a link to the fabulous work known as The Sparkle Effect.
We're here early before they wake up. We stay late, we stay informed, we invest in the latest technology.
We take the time to train the next generation of doctors and nurses. We work together to make sure we heal their bodies and their minds.
We do this not because it's our job, but because this is about our veterans' lives. This is our mission. More than 300,000 of us working as one, together with families and loved ones. No matter where they live in this country, we'll be there.
We all come together and stand together to serve our veterans. We stand strong, united. Stand with us in caring for our veterans.
Imagine. Imagine being denied an apartment because of your religion, or your race, or because you have children, or a disability.
It's so wrong.
Yes, but who has the power to stop this?
You do. Each of us has the power. The law is on your side. It's illegal for landlords to discriminate because of race, color, religion, sex, national origin, disability, or familial status. If you suspect that you have experienced housing discrimination, file a complaint with HUD immediately so we can investigate it. Fair housing is your right.
Use it.
To learn more, visit hud.gov/fairhousing. That's hud.gov/fairhousing. Or call 1-800-669-9777. 1-800-669-9777. A public service message from HUD in partnership with the National Fair Housing Alliance.
Continuing this week's edition of the Florida Roundtable on the Florida News Network, Bill Mick with political scientist Chris Muro, and we're going through each of the six amendments that'll be on your ballot in November. We're wrapping up Amendment 3, which was the recreational marijuana amendment, Chris.
Right. I think the legislature dropped the ball here, Bill. I think if the legislature had recognized what was happening in society with this issue, they could have headed this off at the pass by decriminalizing certain amounts of for personal consumption. Because I think most voters believe that people who possess small amounts of marijuana for recreational purposes should not be going through the criminal justice system.
If it's harm, it's harm to themselves, and they're not the folks who are out there robbing people blind.
Exactly.
And we don't want to see the dirtbag drug dealer with hundreds of pounds of marijuana selling it to everybody. So
Right. No,
potentially,
nobody wants
there could
that
have
either.
Been some mitigation here. That's interesting.
There could have been, and I think there should have been. Now, the other side of this, though, is order for this to be ratified, it needs 60%. There's only three states out of the 24 that have legalized it. And where there's been a vote, Bill, only three states have reached the plus 60 mark. Maryland, New Jersey, and Arizona. Arizona with 60.03% when it legalized it for
recreational
purposes.
Sounds like it may not bode well for the amendment here in Florida, given the heavy Republican advantage in voter registration, and conservatives tend to be against a measure like this.
Yeah, exactly. So far, the states that have opposed Arkansas and the Dakotas, so you still have Republican holdouts. Nebraska is one of those states that haven't even legalized it for medicinal purposes. So, There, the people who are most opposed to this do happen to be Republican voters. So I do think it's going to be a struggle. I don't think it's impossible, but I think it's going to be a struggle to get to that 60% mark.
Amendment 4 is going to be the big attention grabber, and that would enshrine access to abortions in the Florida Constitution.
Right.
It is a wedge issue, it seems. It seems a lot of these may be wedge issues or issues designed to drive certain segments of the population to the polls. The left has been claiming this abortion issue since forever and have made it an issue in the upcoming election for the last 3 or 4 years.
Sure.
So what are you reading in this one?
Well, a couple of interesting things here is, you know, on April 1st of 2024, the Florida Supreme Court issued two major rulings on abortion. The first one was upholding the six-week ban that the legislature had passed and that the governor had signed into law. Mm-hmm. That six-week ban goes into effect May 1st of 2024. The Supreme Court ruled 6-1 that abortion is not a fundamental right and it's not found in our state constitution. What's interesting about that, Bill, is it overturns a 1989 Florida Supreme Court decision. Henry T.W. was the name of that case. And it was a landmark decision by all accounts because it went way above and beyond what any other state at that time had ruled about abortion. And they said that the Florida Constitution recognizes this as a fundamental right, so much so that even minors are protected in securing an abortion without parental consent or notification. So, wow. 1989, the Florida Supreme Court went big to the left on this issue. The Florida Supreme Court, in April 1st of 2024, overturned that. Now, in a 4-3 ruling the same day, they approved the Amendment 4 and the language to appear on the ballot for the November 5th, 2024 general election.
We were talking a moment ago about money in these elections on these amendments, and there's a group called Yes on 4 that has $20 million in the bank for this initiative from various abortion rights groups. Is there an opposition, and do they have any money to fight it?
Well, you've got Susan B. Anthony out there, and you've got the Florida Right to Life and some other Right to Life organizations that are mobilizing now, but they're definitely behind the proponents of this now. They're not out in front on this. So they've got catch-up. They've got makeup work to do.
Are there problems with the language here? Any concerns that are showing up?
Absolutely. This amendment would allow for, I mean, it says up until viability, there can be no law or any regulation. Now, what that means, viability, can be debated and argued. Most people are assuming that it is up to the 24th week of pregnancy. So basically, this
amendment. But assumptions are never good when you're talking about matters of law.
Well, exactly. Yeah. Matters of law and matters of science, too, here. You're mm-hmm. talking about cell division, heartbeat, brain waves, things of that nature.
Sure.
So it's
is the
really,
medical community solidified around any particular definition here?
There's been no announcement yet, Bill, from like the Florida Medical Association or even the American Medical Association getting involved in this.
Okay.
But I do anticipate that in the upcoming weeks and months that we will start to hear more people endorsing or opposing this amendment. But
I'm surprised the Supreme Court let it through if they felt it was vague, or maybe they didn't feel it was vague.
Well, I mean, it's 4-3. Uh-huh. Right. This was 4-3. This one vote would have stopped this amendment from appearing on the ballot.
Right.
And the argument was, yeah, viability is a common term. Everybody knows it. And the voters are really smart, said the Supreme Court.
You'll note they're not elected by voters. They're appointed.
I kind of said, well, have you met voters recently? Yeah,
it's
not
sad,
quite
but there's a lot of the electorate that's not engaged. And we put these kinds of decisions in front of them. Right. It seems many times. To circumvent the lawmaking process. So, again, back to our original question.
Yeah.
Does this belong in the Constitution, or is it something to be set in law by the legislature?
Well, I would prefer that the legislature, the elected representatives of the people, are the ones that are going to regulate this. That's what federalism is about.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the Dobbs decision from the Supreme Court did, was it said that the states are going to be determining for each state what those policies would be. For some reason, the media narrative now is that that is a policy that doesn't exist. The idea that federalism is a way of skirting the issue. Because there was,
It leaves it in the hands of the states, which
Donald Trump came out.
He said it very well, I thought.
Well, Donald Trump came out and said he opposes a national ban, that this should be a state-by-state issue. That's mm-hmm. called federalism. That's right. What we have been fighting for, to overturn Roe. And to return this back to the states.
Right.
That's where this should be done, is through the elected representatives of the people. But as far as a policy position, Bill, Having unregulated for the first 6 months of pregnancy, I think, is an extreme position. The other part of the language of this bill is that it also can be for the health of the mother, not the life of the mother, Bill. Health is something much different,
Completely different, broad. Very true.
And that is determined solely and exclusively, as the language says, by the health care provider.
So if that health care provider happens to be an abortion doctor, he's going to have a different opinion than somebody who's pro-life.
Unregulated, determining this themselves, no accountability, no oversight. The health care provider gets to make this determination unilaterally.
Early polling has this one in trouble. Do you see it staying in trouble?
The recent polling that's come out has 42% approval right now. I think that number goes up. I think that Amendment 4 gets more than 50%, Bill, but I don't think it gets to 60%. So I think the 60% rule is going to stop this from
getting It's going to be interesting to watch the campaign, though, with the funding that the Yes on 4 people have. They're going to push a lot of ads at people. They're going to hear about this a lot.
Well, it's true. So, I mean, you know, the opponents of this can't just kick back and think this is going to save us.
Right.
They have to get out there and say, listen, 6 months of pregnancy unregulated, this is extreme. Giving all sole discretion to healthcare providers with no accountability is extreme. That this issue needs to be in the hands of the elected representatives of the people. That's where you need to make your voice heard, not through the revision process. Let's remember, though, Bill, there's this Amendment 3 and 4, there's a political side to this.
Uh-huh.
Even if these amendments fail, I think there's a bigger goal here, and that is to draw out certain segments of the population that might not vote for the general election in November. And I think Joe Biden and Democrats in general are banking on bringing out in larger numbers Democrats to participate in the fall election.
Do you think that's successful here in Florida?
I think that Democrats will pick up a few seats in the state Senate and in the state House. I do not see them, though, being able to take Rick Scott out. Recent polling that has emerged since this not only shows that the amendment's failing, but Rick Scott and Donald Trump both have a 7 or 8 point lead over their Democratic challengers. So I don't think it's going to be as successful as Joe Biden believes it's going to be.
We've got a couple of more of these amendments to get through, and then some other ideas about this process that we're going to share with you as the Florida Roundtable continues. Chris Muro with us on the Florida News Network. Stick around. We'll dig up Amendments 5 and 6 and some ideas about them in the future.
Looking to make your garden fresh and new this spring? Quality Green Specialists in DeLand has what you're looking for. Fancy shrubs, large trees like magnolias and hollies, beautiful flowers like super tunias and azaleas, olives, citrus, peaches, blueberries, vegetables and herbs too. Enjoy gardening at its best. Select from our quality fertilizers and organics like azomite. Great plants, sustainable products. Friendly expert advice. 335 West Michigan Avenue, DeLand, and online at qualitygreenspecialist.com.
Life can be full of risks. One thing you shouldn't take a risk with ever is your family's health insurance. If you're self-employed or you now need affordable health insurance, you need to make this free call right now and see how the Health Insurance Helpline can help you get it.
800-398-0651. 800-398-0651. 800-398-0651. That's 800-398-0651.
More than 50,000 distracted driving crashes occurred last year in Florida. And sadly, close to 300 people involved in those crashes never made it home. Distracted driving is dangerous driving. It puts everyone in danger. The text can wait. Put it down and focus on driving. Brought to you by the Florida Department of Highway Safety and Motor Vehicles.
Have fungus gnats invaded your potted plants?
Control these pests with BTI, the active ingredient in Summit Responsible Solutions mosquito bits. This naturally occurring bacterium kills mosquito larvae, and it also kills fungus gnat larvae in potting soil. Just follow the easy instructions on the label. Mosquito bits are harmless to people, plants, and wildlife. Summit mosquito bits are available at garden centers, hardware stores, and at summitresponsiblesolutions.com.
Bill Mick with Chris Muro on the Florida Roundtable. Chris, a political scientist, as we evaluate and try to explain a little bit the six amendments on the Florida ballot in November to our Constitution. Chris, we're up to amendment number five, which is homestead annual inflation adjustment. Again, first and foremost, constitutional issue or one that can be done by lawmaking, and should it be on the ballot at all?
Yeah, this is a constitutional issue right here, Bill.
Okay.
And it should be on the ballot. It's a good idea. Basically, what it's saying is everybody who's a homeowner here in Florida has a $50,000 total homestead exemption.
Right.
Basic. There's a $25,000, and then there's an additional $25,000 that was adopted in 2008, Bill,
right,
by voters in a constitutional amendment. What Amendment 5 would do, if it's approved, is this the $25,000 additional exemption would be indexed to inflation. Every January 1st, beginning in 2025, the property appraiser would have to reassess each property based upon the consumer price index. So let's say, for example, the CPI shows a 4.5% inflation rate, then the homestead exemption, that portion would be expanded by 4.5%.
So this would be one of the $25,000 portions that gets adjusted, not both.
That's right.
Okay.
Just the one, and right, it does not affect the school levy portion of the property tax exemption. It's only for non-school property tax ad valorem.
And the concern that I'm hearing is that this could be costly to local governments that benefit from that other tax. So,
well, you know, yeah, but I think that's a red herring, Bill, because if you look at the analysis, we're looking at maybe $25 to $30 million a year across 67 counties,
right,
and hundreds and hundreds of municipalities.
And as their budgets go generally, that's not a big chunk of money.
No, when you're talking about $23 million or $25 million, when you have 23 million people in the state, you know, It's going to be a very modest $70-$75 maybe you're going to save.
Uh-huh.
The problem is that, well, the thing I like, Bill, is that it also will affect future. So any additional homestead exemption that's added in the future will also be indexed to inflation, the non-school portion.
Okay.
Now, you might remember, Bill, in 2018, there was an amendment. There were 12 that year. 11 passed. The one that should have passed that didn't was an additional $25,000 homestead exemption.
Uh-huh.
It got 58.6% of the vote.
Wow.
It just fell short.
But unusual for voters not to vote themselves a tax break.
Really, yeah. It was bizarre. But, I mean, it was 2018, and that was a, you know, an interesting year politically.
Mm-hmm.
So it fell just short. But imagine, Bill, if we had an additional $25,000 exemption for homeowners, it would provide some serious relief to the homeowner insurance situation that we have now.
Right.
If voters had been wise enough to add that provision in 2018. So this Amendment 5 is a modest step forward, but I think it's a good one. It's an important one. And I'm hoping that this can get across the finish line.
That's another thing about these amendments, though, like we saw with recreational marijuana, like we've seen with other amendments in the past. No never means no. Some group gets behind one and brings it back. Even if it was voted down, it shows up again down the road. And that's always a possibility.
Well, that's democracy. We keep voting until we get our desired outcome.
Well, and yeah, when we're supposed to be a Republican and have representatives voting for our laws. Last amendment that we will face is campaign financing by tax dollar for the governor's office and the cabinet level officers in the state. I've never liked this idea. This does appear to be a form and function of government issue, or is it?
Well, this is a part of the, you know, Amendment 1 we talked about, Bill, with the partisan school board.
Yeah.
This public campaign financing came from that same revision back in 1998. So remember, this Constitutional Revision Commission, they can bundle numerous different issues into one amendment.
Which is not the restriction for citizen initiative.
That's right.
Yeah.
And that's a reform hopefully we can talk about that we need to see with the Revision Commission. But this here, Amendment 6, we've tried this before. It failed once, I think, in 2012. So it's back to get rid of this. This is welfare for politicians.
It is.
Right. So what we're doing is and it's only applicable to the executive branch, the governor and the three cabinet positions.
Correct.
In 2022, Bill, do you know we spent $13.5 million on public financing of campaigns
from candidates who are raising millions anyway? The argument is underfunded candidates
right.
need this money.
Right. Do you know who the candidate that received more than 50% of that total $13.5 million, they received almost $7.8 million of it.
That would be Governor DeSantis.
It was Governor DeSantis.
Uh-huh.
And $3.5 million for Charlie Crist. The remaining million was between the Attorney General and the CFO.
Not a process I'm fond of, and I'm hoping there are changes. I want to ask Chris Mirro about that when the Florida Roundtable continues in moments here on the Florida News Network.
Is your vessel no longer your dream, but becoming your nightmare? The Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission has a program that may be able to help. Owners of vessels that have been declared at risk by law enforcement may now apply for the Florida Vessel Turn-In Program. If you're eligible, this program can have your vessel removed and disposed of at no cost to you. For more information on this opportunity to prevent your vessel from becoming derelict, visit FloridaVTIP.com. That's FloridaVTIP.com. Don't wait until it's too late.
World-class experts, beautiful flowers and foliage, a kid zone, juried artists and crafters, free admission. Sounds pretty great, right? If you agree, then you won't want to miss the 62nd annual Apopka Art and Foliage Festival, April 27th and 28th at Kitland Nelson Park. Check out the incredible flowers and foliage, talk to the plant doctors, and learn more about conservation. Plus, over 75 award-winning artists and crafters, food trucks, and live entertainment. Visit Apopka Art and Foliage Festival.com.
Looking for cheap flights or cheap tickets? Call the low-cost airline travel hotline now for prices so low, we can't publish them anywhere. We'll even save you money with cheap travel deals on hotels, rental cars, even complete travel packages. Call us first for the absolute cheapest prices on U.S. and international airline tickets and hotels.
802-341-4542. 802-341-4542. That's 802-341-4542.
Parents of Florida, you are not alone in your parenting journey. April is Child Abuse Prevention Month. In challenging moments, it's brave to ask for help. Prevent Child Abuse Florida and partners across the state are ready to support you with resources and programs right in your community. The state of Florida invests in you because every parent deserves support and every child deserves a loving home. Visit PreventChildAbuseFL.org.
Shortness of breath, patient's confused. Temp 102.
He just had an infection. What's going on?
He's becoming septic.
Antibiotics started. Bed ready. Let's move him.
Infections can lead to a deadly chain reaction in your body called sepsis. Very quickly, sepsis can cause tissue damage, organ failure, and even death. If you know the risks, can spot the symptoms, and act fast, then you can get ahead of sepsis. Learn more at cdc.gov/sepsis.
My muscles ached. I was tired all the time.
My son had a full-blown asthma attack. It came out of nowhere.
The unsettling thing about some symptoms is
I had a fever and these terrible headaches.
You don't always know what's causing them.
It was Lyme disease from a tick bite.
I had Zika virus from a mosquito.
He had a reaction to cockroach allergens.
Threats to your health can come from unexpected places. Get the facts. Visit pestrule.org. A public service message from the National Pest Management Association.
Wrapping up this weekend's edition of the Florida Roundtable, political scientist Chris Mirro with us as we talk these constitutional amendments. We've laid out the six amendments, Chris, but it's not a process I'm a fan of, especially the Citizen Initiative
right.
and Constitution Revision Commission's portions of this. I made a suggestion to my local state representative that we have an amendment to make these amendments required to be form and function of government only. and then potentially wiping out previous amendments that have violated that provision.
Right.
He seems to think he can get it in front of the legislature and maybe get an amendment down the road that would restrict this to form and function of government, which is where I think it should be. How do you see that?
Well, you know, Bill, we've been trying to reform the process. The only success we've had is with the amazingly, incredibly great provision that we adopted in 2006, which is the 60% rule.
Right.
Since then, we have been unable to rein this process in.
We've talked several ways. The getting rid of the Constitution Revision Commission didn't happen.
Raising the
threshold to 67% didn't happen.
Right. Well, I don't think that we're going to get to 67%. I think that's a losing argument. We're not going to abolish the Revision Commission, but what we should do is we should, and I think for the 2026 election, Bill, we should require the Revision Commission can only address a single subject.
Single topic like everything else, yep.
No more bundling. And put a cap on the number of amendments that they can issue.
I like it.
Maybe five.
Actually, again, what about restricting it to form and function of government? You think it's got a shot?
I think that it's a great idea, but I think it'll be difficult to get over the 60% threshold, Bill. What I would like to see, I think, is an idea that could be sold, is instead of having a commission that creates new amendments, have a commission that is only role it has is to get rid of existing laws or language that is cumbersome, costly, ineffective. And those are the only kinds of amendments that it puts out, is to rescind and repeal. That's the kind of commission
that
we need.
If you've passed a constitutional amendment, it now takes that 60% to take it off, to reverse anything. You pass it by amendment, you got to kill it by amendment.
Well, that is true. That is true. But, you know, that's what the beauty of the principle of the 60% rule is, it requires a broad consensus of a supermajority of the population.
Mm-hmm.
So it does require the proponents of an idea.
Takes a campaign effort.
Because what has the legislature done in the last decade or so? They throw stuff up against the wall and they hope it sticks.
Mm-hmm.
No leadership, no movement out there to try to inform the public. They just put it out there and hope for the best. That's why in 2020, Bill, there was a provision that would require any amendment would have to be approved in two subsequent election cycles.
Uh-huh.
That failed. As you mentioned, the 2022 abolishing the Revision Commission, that failed.
Right.
We have to.
Is it because the voters are uneducated or they really like this process?
Most people that I've spoken with over the past 25 years are not very enthralled with the Revision Commission process.
Then we need a campaign to make a change. Let me ask you before we run out of time here. Right. What's the best way for a voter to prepare for these amendments and to really know what they're doing here?
Well, the best way for any voter to prepare to go in and make an informed choice is to listen to Bill Mick anytime you can.
I'll write you the check after the show. Thank you, Chris. You've got to be informed and you got to be engaged.
You do.
And
there's
if you're
a
not
lot of
engaged,
information out there. There's radio, talk radio, number one. There's of course, the internet. There's a lot of smart people out there.
Chris Miro, I'll look forward to having you back on the roundtable.
It's an honor.
Thank you, my friend. I appreciate it. Informative this week. And we'll see you next weekend on the Florida Roundtable. Enjoy this weekend, everybody. We'll see you then.
You've been listening to the Florida Roundtable with Bill Mick on news and public affairs presentation of the Florida News Network. The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of this station management, owners, or sponsors. For questions or concerns, contact Florida Roundtable at fnnonline.net.